Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
Aloha, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal on this Tuesday, and today we are going to be talking about the recent and controversial issues surrounding the monk seals. We leave no topic uncovered speaking with three of Hawaii's critical experts working with NOAA Fisheries Monk Seal Program, Dr. Charles Littinen, Dr. Michelle Barberi, and Dr. Rachel Seabury Sprague, my apologies, join us as we talk monk seal hospitals, community response, and beer. To begin, we take a glimpse of the monk seal program with Dr. Charles Littinen. Charles, thank you for returning to the show. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks, Carly. It's great to be back.
So you were last here almost 2 years ago, and a lot has happened in the monk seal world since you were with us last. Tell us what's gone on for you guys in general in the last couple of years.
Well, we only have an hour, so that's a lot to sum up in such a short time. So we've just continued working on the population, monitoring it, intervening as much as we can to help the species survive, and doing a lot of research and a lot of outreach to the community.
Excellent. And for those of us who aren't familiar with monk seals, most of us should be at this point, but if they aren't, tell us a little bit about these animals.
So Hawaiian monk seals, as you can guess by their name, are a species of seal that live only in Hawaii, only place in the world that they're found. And they have been here for probably millions of years. And they're unique for a couple of reasons. The first is they're the world's only tropical seal, totally tropical. And the other is that they're one of the most endangered marine mammals on the planet.
Now, there are a few other species of monk seals found in the world. Are they closely related to those? Or?
So there were two other species of monk seal. One, the Mediterranean monk seal, which is still around, but also critically endangered. And then there was the Mediterranean monk seal, which went extinct in the 1950s. They are related in name, but and some behaviors, but by and large, you know, they separated from each other millions and millions of years ago. So they're very distant cousins, I guess would be the closest comparison.
So we're very lucky here in Hawaii to have the only tropical seal.
Yep, they definitely do their own thing relative to other pinnipeds.
So you say they do their own thing. Tell me, how does the monk seal program come into play with the seals that we have here in Hawaii?
So as we talked about, monk seals are endangered. The population has been declining for quite a while. The federal government really started monitoring them back in the 50s. And when they started to really pay attention in the 70s, they realized there had been a really, really dramatic decline in the population. So our agency, National Marine Fisheries Service, we work for NOAA, was given the responsibility of understanding and trying to recover the population in the late 1970s, early 1980s. And so for the decades since then, we've focused on first and foremost quality science to understand the species and the threats against it, and developing strategies to try to help recover. And in those decades, we've now expanded to really incorporating the science, the recovery, and a human component, an outreach component, to educate everybody about monk seals and why they're special.
That's no small feat to be responsible for the recovery of an entire species. And I know you guys do a lot with the species themselves. Walk us through a little bit of how you track and monitor the population and how that applies to the science that you guys do.
So the core of our program is basically, it's called population assessment, but it's in its simplest form, it's identifying, and this is not simple to do, but virtually every individual in the population so that we can track them from the day that they're born until the day that they die. So we know for females when they've pupped, how many pups they've had and what's happened to those pups, or for some other animals if they've been injured and whether how well they survived or recovered from that injury. So that takes a lot of effort. In the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, where most seals are found, we send out seasonal field camps every summer to go and monitor those populations. And we can identify seals by flipper tags that we give them that have a unique identifier when they're born and they wean, we flipper tag them. But they're also really identifiable by natural bleach marks, which are like birthmarks, by scars, by wounds from sharks and other sorts of things. So we build up this incredible data set that allows us to track these individuals and give us really great ideas about what's going on in the population and which animals are at the greatest threat. Main Hawaiian Islands, we use the exact same things, flipper tags, scars, natural bleach marks, but we rely on the community to collect that information and report those back to us.
Now, you have separate ways of monitoring them seals for the main Hawaiian Islands and the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, and they're the same seals, but doing somewhat different behaviors in how they're moving and pupping. And can you talk a little bit about those differences?
Yeah, so you can't imagine maybe two different types of places, the northwestern Hawaiian Islands versus the main Hawaiian Islands. So northwest Hawaiian Islands, Papahānaumokuakea Marine National Monument, small sandy islands stretched over thousands of miles and relatively pristine habitat and virtually no people. So monk seals go about their lives relatively unmolested from people, but they face a lot of threats. And so actually there's 900 or so seals up there, but the population's declining. And it's a variety of things, food limitation, shark predation, aggression between monk seals, entanglement in marine debris, and other things like that. The main Hawaiian Islands, we have this very interesting yet sometimes confounding pattern where you have fewer seals, roughly about 200, but the population is doing great. So despite millions of tourists, millions of people, sewage, sort of degradation of habitat, fisheries extraction, all of these different things that could be, you would think would be harmful to an endangered species, the population is doing really, really well. So they have to deal with seals down here trying to find enough sleep when they come out on the beach or avoiding people's dogs and those sorts of things. So the struggles that we have in terms of recovery and managing the population are really different between the two locations.
So quite a big feat in both aspects of both the northwestern Hawaiian Islands and the main Hawaiian Islands. Now, through the science team, you also have a recovery team. How does that differ from what you do in terms of keeping track of the population?
So the science program is largely just one single program, the program that I run. And so we do the research on the biology and ecology and identifying the threats across the entire archipelago. The recovery program is a much larger contingent of people, and I think, you know, Rachel can touch on this in a little bit later. But that is a consortium of the research program, the management side of the monk seal program. They've pulled together a pretty diverse group of stakeholders here that give us some input on other considerations besides monk seals. So whether it's economics, if it's Hawaiian culture, if it's other things, because, you know, recovery takes place. It's not in a vacuum. It's particularly down here with a lot of people and a lot of interests. And so, and there's other researchers from other universities. The Marine Mammal Center in Sausalito is a really big partner for us to help take care of animals. So it's definitely, it takes a village to do recovery. And there are people stretched across the world that are proactive and part of the effort that we're doing.
Now, as you said, the monk seal population is increasing in the main Hawaiian Islands, and with that, it does not happen in a vacuum. What are some of the conflicts or issues that you've come up with an increasing population in the main Hawaiian Islands?
Yeah, so there's a lot, and I think the biggest conflict has to do largely with perception. So scientists like to call the experience that we're going through right now is a shifting baseline. So monk seals, based on the best available science, were across the entire archipelago a few thousand years ago. And at some point after that, you know, when the first humans arrived to the islands, they were, and cities and populations were being set up in the main Hawaiian Islands. Monk seals were hunted. They were locally extirpated. They were made extinct in the main Hawaiian Islands. And subsequent to that, as more, like, some seals would come down from the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, they were probably killed or scared off or whatever. And so it was very difficult for the population to reestablish itself. Starting in about the 80s or 90s, seals became much more regular. It started basically on Ni'ihau and then has spread east across the main Hawaiian Islands ever since. And as public perception has changed, people have become more accommodating to them. They've been protected under the Endangered Species Act and the Marine Mammal Protection Act. That's allowed them to take a foothold. So there are people here that have, you know, born and raised in Hawaii, grown up for decades, and, you know, talked to an 80-year-old fisherman that's never seen a monk seal until this past year. So they're really struggling. A lot of people are struggling with do monk seals really belong here? Or how do I go about my life the same way now that there are these protected species showing up on the beach? So with a new animal here, people are having to learn, including the scientists, a lot about what that means. So we do studies about their diet and their feeding behavior in order to help fishermen understand what the impacts of monk seals are to local marine resources and whether there is truly competition, if there are ways that we can work with fishermen to mitigate seals and fisheries interacting. We do a lot of work because there's people here and they have pets. We really have to worry about diseases that animals can give to monk seals. So there's just a whole host of things that we've never really had to focus on in the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands. And almost every single one of them comes back to this interface between people, seals, and the federal government or the management agencies that are taking care of monk seals.
So it's certainly keeping you busy then.
It's busy, it's controversial, and it's kind of a process of learning through the occasional mistake. So
I think one of the assumptions that has been out there in the public is that the monk seals are eating a lot of fish that fishermen are going for. Now, you guys did a study recently looking at the diet and how much fish consumption monk seals take within a day or a month. Can you elaborate a little bit on that study and what you guys found?
Yeah, so there's actually been a few studies with this, both one from looking primarily at numbers and estimating diet, the other actually recording video footage that tends to translate better to the public in understanding this. But Rachel and I and a couple of other people worked on a study to take everything that we knew that monk seals eat, primarily from looking at their poop. You look at hard parts in it and you can identify the fish and the octopus and the other things that are in the diet. And really looking at, one, what is the overlap with recreational and commercial fisheries? And there is some, but not as much as people would believe. And then trying to estimate, based on what we think monk seals would need energetically, how much of those species they would need to consume. Because there are some perceptions that a single monk seal could eat anywhere between, say, 400 and 600 pounds of fish a day, which is completely impossible. But it does speak to some of the concerns or the strength of the fear. And so we really tried to look at not just what do monk seals eat, but what do they eat in context of other predatory fish, other marine mammals, fishermen, both commercial and recreational. And the gist of it is that, you know, monk seals maybe eat anywhere, depending on their size, between, 5 and 10 pounds of fish a day, maybe a little bit more for a much larger animal. But it's not more than that. It's nowhere near tens, dozens, hundreds of pounds of fish a day. And the other thing that we looked at is using critter cams. So to let the seals show us what they actually do, because you can go to a fisherman and you can show them numbers. Most people learn a lot better by watching television. So we do attach National Geographic critter cams to the backs of the seals. They go out and they show us all of the stuff that they're passing up and what they do eat. And the single most important take home so far from it is that for every one thing that a monk seal eats, he passes up over 300 things. So they're very conservative in their foraging.
Very picky eaters, yes, in their foraging as well. Now, the critter cams, for those of us who have never seen them before, they're just like portable video cameras that you're attaching to the backs of the seals?
Yeah. So they are, the one thing that makes them special, they're kind of like an over-engineered GoPro, but they are able to go to much deeper depths. So if you took your GoPro down to 1,500 feet, it would get crushed. So they're pretty high tech. They're pretty robust. But it is basically an HD television or HD camera that you glue to the back of the seal. It records for maybe up to a week, and then you recover it.
And you've been able to get some amazing footage. I think I've seen over the years some of the videos of the monk seal turning over the rock to get some food, and there's some great footage out there.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's really quite exciting when we get it back, because you never know, you know, no two videos are the same. So, and each animal is really actually has its own sort of quirks and behaviors. So you don't know if you're going to see an animal fighting off a shark to get a fish, or flipping over a rock, or a lot of them actually just sometimes spend all their time sleeping in a cave, which is not terribly exciting. But we're still in a phase of discovery. You know, we still understand the fundamentals of what monk seals do, but every camera brings back something that we didn't know.
And what about the shark predation? How frequent are you able to see that or observe that?
So shark predation in terms of eating monk seals, we don't We don't see it often except in one location at French Frigate Shoals where we have a problem with Galapagos sharks eating pups. It's the only place that it happens. But we do see the wounds from seals. But shark predation is kind of a background threat. Obviously, there are large predators out there, tiger sharks, great whites. But it's not something that we're really concerned about except in that one location at French Frigate Shoals. We do see from the cameras a lot of direct competition, though, between a lot of shark species and for monk seals. So, like you said, the monk seal will flip over a rock to grab the octopus that's hiding underneath or the fish that might be underneath. And these seals will be escorted by dozens of fish and several sharks. And as soon as they flip it over, the shark will come in and charge and try to take it away. So you'll see really aggressive interactions between, we've got great footage of a monk seal and two sandbar sharks that are larger than the seal. And both are giving as good as they're getting. I mean, the monk seal's ramming the shark's ramming the monk seal. So it's not a predatory competition as much as a, we want you to work for our food, so.
Well, it sounds like it's a very exciting video footage that you have.
It's great. And it's the most powerful thing about it is that excitement or that perspective from the seal's point of view, it engages everybody. So we work a lot with schools with the hopes of, educating the next generation to understand what monk seals mean, hopefully going home and working with their families to dispel some myths. But even I've sat across the table from some of the most irate fishermen, that don't want to talk to a federal biologist. They don't want to talk about monk seals. You put that video on and you just can't help it. They'll lean forward and they'll start commenting about why the seal didn't eat that fish and why didn't eat that fish and I'd take that fish. So it's I just can't overemphasize the value of this tool.
It's great. And so you have this population in the main Hawaiian Islands that's increasing and population in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands that's decreasing. Generally speaking, how is the population doing?
So overall, the population is still in decline if you look across the entire archipelago, but it's declining at a much slower rate than it was, particularly when we took over this problem. So in the 80s and 90s, it was declining at about 8% per year. And for most people, that doesn't mean very much. But from a population point of view and a conservation point of view, it's pretty horrendous. So in this last year, we've had some abbreviated field camp seasons because of hurricanes and other things. So our trend estimates are a little bit weak these last couple of years. But we estimate the population's declining at 3% or less. But we'll probably be able to back correct that, and it'll be even slower. So things are looking good. We need them to look better, and we still have a ways to go on that. But the alarm that we had even just 5 or 10 years ago that we were about to come to this cliff edge where there would be no coming back for the species, that has been tempered a little bit. So we're still working hard, but it looks like we've got some more time to start to implement stuff, and the growth in the main Hawaiian Islands it gives us a lot more time as long as that continues.
Well, that is very rewarding, I'm sure, for everybody that's working so hard on this issue. And it's nice to hear some good news, too. We have heard some bad news in the news the other day about monk seals. And there was a monk seal that had been hit or shot at. And do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm happy to, and I think Rachel can jump in as well if she wants to. But occasionally, and they seem to happen in sets of two or three, we do have animals that are intentionally killed by the public, and usually we don't know who did it. So we're always reticent to discuss what the motive might be or that sort of thing. But it does go back to, I think, generally when that happens, it is because of misperceptions about the animal, or that they are an easy scapegoat for frustrations with, the federal government or the agency that's taking care of them. So quite often they're the innocent victim of some sort of misunderstanding or someone else's misdeed. And there's an investigation going on as to what that happened. This was an animal on Kauai that was killed by blunt force trauma, and sadly it was a young seal that had previously survived a dog attack just that same year, and it was a pup of the year, so double tragedy, but hopefully, if you look for a silver lining, it's galvanized communities to at least work within their own communities to say that this is unacceptable, because there was an enormous amount of outrage that followed the killing.
There was, and it was interesting to follow some of the public responses and comments to that incident. And, you know, it must be very hard when you're working so hard and devoting so much of your time to preserving a species, when you have negative interactions that come up like that. How do you reconcile that?
That's a good question, and it is a blow every time, because doing this Monk Seal work, because we're stretched over so much of the archipelago, it's incredibly complex. The logistic, everything is hard about it. And you feel that you've gained so much ground with people down here, and then this happens, and you just kind of throw your arms up in the air and wonder if you're making a difference at all. I would say the most reassuring thing, though, is I've been doing this for 12 years, almost 12 and a half, and how far the public has come in terms of their appreciation for monk seals is pretty dramatic. So every time there's media about monk seals, I'm online and I look at all the Facebook comments or the electronic comments that follow. Historically, if something was published about a monk seal 12 years ago, probably 80% of the comments would be anti-monk seal, and there'd be one or two brave souls that would speak up saying that they're cute or they're whatever. And quite often, I would have to get in and write on the comments something to inform this misperception. You know, it's good the monk seal is dead because it doesn't belong here. So then you get some dorky scientist writing in, well, this is the truth. Now, I just read those, and you'll have 90% are positive comments saying, you know, this shouldn't be done to monk seals. Monk seals are great. Monk seals belong here. Monk seals are, you know, we need to be better stewards for monk seals. And you'll get one person that will say something derogatory about monk seals or inaccurate. And I don't have to write anything, because there'll be 25 people that will be, that's crazy. It's stupid. It's whatever. So there has been a sea change. We still have a ways to go, like many other things with monk seals, but that's the stuff that I think gets most of us through, is that we no longer feel alone and isolated in what we're trying to do.
Well, you're definitely not alone. There is a huge population of people there that not only care for the monk seals, but really love them and volunteer. And want to jump a little bit into the volunteer issues in a minute here, but I also want to talk to Michelle, who's with us today, who was able to work on the monk seal that unfortunately had blunt force trauma. Now, Michelle, you're the veterinarian and health program coordinator for NOAA Fisheries Monk Seal Program, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, Carly. It's a pleasure to be able to work with these animals in such a sometimes very intimate capacity. So you really get to know their individual habits and get to see them as individuals, and also working as a scientist, you get to think about the health of the bigger population too. So
from your perspective, working directly with the animals, How do you reconcile when something like that happens, in terms of how you approach the animal, not only from trying to find out what happened, but how do you personally deal with that?
Yeah, I don't know if I can say that I really ever reconcile it, other than to build on what Charles said and just say that it is very rewarding to see the communities rally around the species. I think that it means a lot to know that the communities are supportive of the seals. And when an animal ends up on the necropsy table, and a necropsy is an autopsy, but just renamed because it's on an animal, it's a time where we're very somber, and we do look at everything, and we use that as an opportunity to learn about how they work. We learn about not just what killed the animal, but all kinds of things about the species. So it's not often that you have a chance to really look at an animal from the inside out and think about questions that can help us understand the rest of the population.
And it's not all doom and gloom. You have made some major successes as well. There was a recent monk seal, I think it was on New Year's Eve, that came to you. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I'd be happy to talk about that, because it's a really exciting success story. This is a story about an adult male monk seal that is a regular around Oahu. He also spends a little bit of time on Molokai. And unfortunately, he was observed a couple days before New Year's Eve with some fishing gear hanging out of his mouth. And the team was able to mount a search party at first light the following morning, and they found him right away, brought him into care, and he ended up with a large circle hook in his stomach. But on New Year's Eve, we brought a huge team of people together. I was one of three veterinarians working with him, and an enormous team of people from the program came together to remove the hook from his stomach, and he's made a full recovery. So we're really excited and hoping to put him back in the wild in just a few days.
What a way to ring in the new year, huh?
Yeah, there's nothing like it.
So is there adrenaline going through you when you're about to do that surgery? I mean, this monk seal's life is in your hands, and you're working to try and save it. What are you thinking about?
I think everybody's probably a little bit different, but I would say that the majority of us are so focused on the task at hand that it doesn't all sink in until it's said and done. When you put a seal under anesthesia, it's a worrisome thing. So it's not something we ever take lightly. They are risky animals to anesthetize because they actually are divers. And so they will sometimes have conflicting physiological demands that don't always match up with putting a seal under anesthesia. And those are things that we are really, really mindful about. We don't take it lightly, and we really try to avoid surgery in these animals. This particular case was one where that was a life-saving procedure that he wouldn't have survived without.
Well, I'm glad he got the help that he did. Now, you do a lot of work with the monk seals here on Oahu, but I know you're spending a lot of time on the Big Island as of recent. Why is that?
Yeah, that's really exciting as well, and it's because we have, thanks to the Marine Mammal Center, a place to take monk seals that is a hospital specifically for their needs. And Charles was mentioning some of the things affecting seals in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. Malnutrition is one. And we finally have a place where we can consistently bring monk seals from the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, bring them into a hospital that meets their needs, and essentially provide for their medical needs and nutritional needs so that when we have the next opportunity to go back out to the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, we can release them back where they came from.
So this is an entire hospital dedicated to monk seal rehabilitation and rescue.
It is. It has four pools. Two pools are large enough for adult animals, and two are sort of cakey pools, essentially. And it's a modest facility, but it is absolutely built so that we can really focus on the needs that monk seals have, in particular making sure that human presence is removed to the greatest extent possible. So we have the ability to make sure that we can provide for their nutrition, but they're not necessarily seeing that it's coming from people. We have the ability to monitor them remotely using cameras that are installed so that, you know, we're able to make sure that they're healthy and happy and well adjusted to their settings, but they're also, you know, not necessarily seeing our presence very regularly. So it's great to be able to have that capacity now and a space that we know will always be there for the animals. Generally, anytime we've otherwise needed to bring seals into care, there's been a little bit of difficulty as far as having a spot to put them. There's not always a consistent place where we have quality control, really, for caring for those animals. And so now this is a really huge opportunity. Many of the animals that are malnourished in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands would oftentimes have to be left behind. So it's really rewarding to be able to care for them.
And that's amazing that you think, when you think about those intricacies, like not associating food with people, you know, that's something that I wouldn't have automatically thought about. And I guess because you're releasing these animals, that is a very important consideration.
Yeah, it is. And monk seals can habituate to people fairly easily. Even in the wild, that can happen. And it unfortunately has happened within the last year or so for an animal on the Big Island. That particular seal was a very curious little pup and didn't have a whole lot of seals nearby to learn how to be a seal from, but it did encounter people. And when those seals get older and they start to weigh more, their play bites are not necessarily all that friendly. So, you know, it's unfortunate that once in a while those animals do get habituated to people, even in the wild. So you can see that if it's possible in the wild, it's certainly possible in rehab. So it's something that we work really hard to try to avoid.
Sure, it's hard to manage those expectations. People get excited when they see a wild animal close by. They want to play with it or feed it. And ultimately, that's not going to help the seal at all.
Yeah, it is a detriment to the seal, no matter how you look at it. And, you know, they are very, very cute creatures, particularly when they're the size of a small dog. But we have to remember that it's our responsibility, and that's one of the responsibilities we have with more seals being born in the main Hawaiian Islands, is to keep them wild. And I think that it's it's one of the things that we can really get out as a message to the community. Keep them wild, let them be wild, let seals be, and do their seal thing, and they'll be better off for it.
And going back to the hospital again, just because it's so exciting, I hadn't really heard much about it in the last, year and a half, 2 years before that. How new is this hospital?
The hospital's grand opening was just in September, and they had their first patients come in July. We cared for those animals for a few months, and we were able to release them in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands when the NOAA ship was out there in September. And then we brought in two brand new patients in September, and those animals are still there. They are doing fantastically well. They're young of the year at this point, and we're excited that they're also making a full recovery and will hopefully be released back out there soon.
That's great to have some initial success stories under your belt.
It is. It feels good. And again, it absolutely takes a huge team of people to care for those animals around the clock at times. They can sometimes require some very, very intensive care at the beginning. And we're really pleased that now we can be fairly hands-off with them and they're just continuing to gain some weight.
So I imagine it's somewhat of a difficult decision process when you go out into the field and you see a monk seal that may need some assistance. I don't think you guys just go out there, grab the seal, and figure it out once you get to the hospital. What is that decision process like for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. Anytime we're confronted with making that decision, we ask ourselves a few questions. And the first is this a life-threatening situation? So, for example, the adult male that I was mentioning that had fishing gear coming from his mouth, we knew there was potential for that to be a life-threatening situation. There's the entanglement hazard just for him possibly lodging that on the bottom of the reef, and there's also the potential for that hook to have been damaging. Those are situations where we know that we need to intervene, and we do to the greatest extent possible. There are other times where sometimes not acting is the best action to choose. And those are cases where animals will sometimes suffer an injury in the wild. Maybe it's from a shark, maybe it's from another seal, and they seem to be coping with it just fine. We're not out there to go treat every single monk seal so that it is a pristine specimen and can be in an aquarium. We want to make sure that the animals are only intervened with when we really, really need to and when it's for their own life.
Now, I know you also get a lot of calls from people like seeing monk seals on the beach just lying there and wondering if they're sleeping or they're dead. Do you have any advice on that for the public, how they can distinguish between that?
Well, monk seals are pretty calm animals. When they're hauled out on the beach, generally if they're breathing and sleeping, that's a good thing. More often than not, the thing that we will see in a monk seal that's injured or has something else wrong is that it won't want to haul out. It's something that we're starting to see increasingly commonly now that we have more animals in the main Hawaiian Islands and we have more experience with that. They'll oftentimes log at the surface. So a hauled out resting seal is probably a healthy seal.
Well, that is very good information to know. And, you know, you have such an exciting job. Are you out there every day combing for seals or, you know, what does a typical day for a monk seal veterinarian look like?
Well, I'm not out there combing for seals every day. Fortunately, we have the help of volunteers for that. And we have a great group of volunteers throughout the main Hawaiian Islands that are keeping an eye out for the animals. And they're very keen on picking up even subtle changes in their health or behavior or something that might be wrong. But I do sit behind those emails when they come in or those phone calls when they come in. I am largely on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If something goes amiss with a seal, I know about it and I'm making sure that we're able to respond right away if it's one of those cases. But I do have the privilege of thinking bigger picture a lot of the time as well. And the research that we do with the research program for monk seals actually allows us to use opportunities like when we attach a critter cam to a seal, we also collect samples from those animals, and they're healthy animals, and that helps us survey the health of the general population so that we're on top of it if a new disease were to be introduced that could threaten the population as a whole. And it helps us understand what the baseline level of health is in these animals. We also archive a lot of samples so that we can go back and ask more research questions down the road. Diagnostic technologies are always evolving and advancing our ability to detect things. And sometimes we don't always know to look for something, but 10 years from now, there might be something else that we didn't know of and we didn't know to look for at the time, but we'll have stuff that we can analyze. So we're really focused on looking not just at the individual animals, but also at the big picture population consequences of any perturbation in their health.
So looking at the bigger picture, what do you have planned for the future? Are there monk seal camps or planned for the summertime? I know you guys typically go in the summer to the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. Or are you looking at population counts at all for the monk seals?
Yeah, that is something that is continuing. And as Charles said, it really is the underpinning of the monk seal research program. And it is how we know, it's how we can come up with those numbers and understand what's happening with the population so that we can work to target areas that need help for recovery of the species. So we can look forward to going out again this summer. So NOAA will be going out again in May, and field camps will be put out throughout the northwestern Hawaiian Islands to do population assessment. And the camp staff that are out there are trained to do interventions for animals that are in need. So if there is a seal that is entangled, we can authorize them to disentangle the animal from the marine debris. Sometimes we have animals that get into a fight with each other and they'll develop an abscess from that bite wound. And we've been working to equip those field staff with the supplies and the training that they need in order to actually treat the animal for the abscess so that it can survive, because those can actually be debilitating for young animals.
Wow, it's amazing. And I know the population counts rely a lot, not just on the important scientist and veterinary team of the monk seal research program, but also on the volunteers.
Yeah, absolutely. Volunteers are a really big part of monk seals, particularly in the main Hawaiian Islands. But in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, there are positions for volunteers as well. And we rely on them immensely to not only report back to us about where seals are and who's hauled out where and who hasn't been seen in a while, but also, again, they're the reason that we knew that the adult male that we're hoping to release this week after surgery, they're the reason that we knew that he was hooked. So we're really thankful for their efforts, and we couldn't do what we do without them.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much. You have just an amazing, amazing job, and I'm really excited to see the release of Benny, the monk seal that you worked on New Year's Eve, and very excited to see how the monk seal program fares in the future. Now, Rachel, I want to talk with you a little bit, because you do a lot of community work and work with the volunteers quite a bit.
Thanks, Carly. So, yeah, I am somewhat lucky because I get to work with all of the different parts of the program. I'm the recovery coordinator, and so it's my job to coordinate with Charles and Michelle and the research program, as well as the volunteers and our non-government partners and the other government agencies that are all working on monk seals.
So recovery coordinator is a very large title. So responsible for the entire recovery of the monk seals. What are your primary duties from a day-to-day basis?
Well, it's a recovery coordinator. So it's the entire recovery of the species, I guess you might say, doesn't necessarily fall on me, but coordinating it. So you can sort of think of it as herding cats. So it is somewhat in charge of coordinating the recovery, but nobody reports directly to me if I don't supervise anyone. So it means, you know, working with other programs, working with other agencies, trying to keep the big picture view of monk seal recovery and what needs to happen and what the priorities are, and trying to communicate that to our partners and to some extent to the public. But I try to get information to people who are going to themselves get information out to more people. So it's a lot of communicating, it's a lot of getting information out to folks, and it's a lot of talking with our partners and that kind of thing, to try to get people on the same page, because again, NIMS doesn't necessarily have, power, or we can't compel another government agency like the Fish and Wildlife Service or like the Navy to do something, but we can try to get them to do something. So it ends up with a fair amount of, you know, conflict and negotiation and just trying to get folks figure out where the common ground is and work through people with very competing priorities sometimes.
And not only the government programs, but you also do some work with nonprofits as well for the monk seals.
Yes. So, right, there are a number of government agencies that do a fair amount for monk seals, including, you know, NOAA, the state of Hawaii, Fish and Wildlife, a number of the military departments. But we also work with the volunteers and non-government, non-profit organizations, as well as community stakeholders that might be individuals or other organizations. But the nonprofits are really a good portion of the folks that are out there doing education. They're the ones of the volunteers that are not only out responding to seals on the beach, but they're educating people on the beach. They're going into schools and doing education. They're at the legislature, you know, advocating, you know, lobbying folks both in Hawaii and on the Hill. They're, you know, doing grassroots, trying to do community activism, that kind of thing. And they're out cleaning the beaches. And so we have, you know, a lot of partnerships that go beyond just monk seals themselves.
Now, that is a huge volunteer network that you have, doing a lot of different things for the monk seals. How do you manage the monk seal volunteer program or get people involved with the monk seals?
Well, NOAA does manage some volunteers, but honestly, most of the volunteers at this point are from nonprofit organizations that may receive grants from NOAA or might have agreements with NOAA to cooperate, but otherwise, they are really, truly partners where they are, you know, they're out there, they're part of, you know, the Monk Seal Foundation or the Marine Mammal Center, or, you know, they're not necessarily a Monk Seal volunteer, but folks out there with Sustainable Coastlines or Beach or any of the organizations, you know, Surfrider, that are out there on the beaches doing stuff to help marine, you know, marine resource protection is helping monk seals.
And what kind of response do you get from the volunteers working hard on the monk seals and helping to protect the monk seals when something goes awry? If, for example, like the blunt force trauma incident, or if a monk seal, an injured monk seal, comes up on the beach?
Yeah, I think it can be particularly difficult because, as Charles and Michelle both noted, Michelle's able to interact with the individual animals, but a lot of us do think about monk seal recovery on a population level. And so we're, you know, trying to keep this long view of monk seal recovery and trying to keep this view of sort of the big picture and all of these positive efforts. But for a lot of the volunteers, they're out there on the beaches and they get extremely attached, as most people would, to individual animals. And you also have to think about it, you know, for someone to volunteer their time means that they care pretty passionately about whatever, you know, people don't really volunteer lightly, don't give their time. And so for them to do that means that they really do care a lot and they have a lot of emotion invested in it. So when something happens where an animal either dies from, you know, from natural causes or from an injury or is intentionally killed by someone, a lot of them, I think, do feel personally hurt as well. Or at the very least that you know, the emotion and the feeling hurt from that comes through for them pretty hard.
Now, the active volunteer group or monk seal folks online is amazing. You know, the Facebook groups you see people that Charles talked about are very passionate and vocal about monk seal issues. Now, I saw with the incident that happened in Kauai, there was a reward offered for the monk seal. The reward kept getting larger and larger. How did that come to be?
I think that came to be mostly through some NGOs who have offered rewards in the past. Some of it coming from, it's through DLNR actually. And it's, you know, with folks like the Humane Society of the U.S. and the Monk Seal Foundation and the Conservation Council for Hawaii. And a number of those folks have offered rewards in the past. They got together and wanted to do it again. And as other people heard of it, I think people were really feeling like they wanted to do something. And, you know, rewards can be difficult a little bit from a strategy standpoint, or even from an effectiveness standpoint, because you think about, I think that they can be a very valuable tool for communities and for organizations to show that they literally place value on the life of an animal and that, you know, this has been hurtful and that they would like, they're, you know, they're showing a resolve and showing a literal investment in finding out what happened. At the same time, sometimes, you know, money isn't the only thing that's going, that other people value. You know, obviously none of the cases have been solved so far. So obviously for the people who know what happened, who maybe saw what happened, who know the person who did it, their connection to their tight-knit community is more important than $10,000 of money or $40,000 of money. And, you know, so it's difficult. And I think what I would like to see is for not only a reward to happen, you know, right after a seal is killed, but for an investment to go into communities to create a situation where it doesn't happen in the future, because a reward might, you know, have their might provide some amount of disincentive or some amount of, you know, deterrence value, but at the same time, a longer term investment is really what's going to stop it from happening.
And I think, too, as you mentioned, showing that support, you know, whether it's from a nonprofit or from the community, a lot of people rallied together when that happened and shared their opinion. And I think that was really important to see, that there were so many people who were very upset by what had happened and really wanted to get to the bottom of it and really cared for the seal. I know you do a lot of community work, though, and you guys do presentations into the community. Can you talk a little bit about that strategy and how you decide where to go and what you present on?
Yeah, we, you know, the presentations out in the communities, some of it is us, some of it is our partners. I mean, I kind of encourage, I can't be everywhere, so I encourage people to ask. And so in general, we'll go to places where, you know, Charles or Michelle or I or other folks from our program or the nonprofit partners are asked to come to. And it might be a school program, it might be a, you know, neighborhood association, it might be a, you know, a fisherman's club meeting. And so that's the kind of thing that I'm always trying to spread the word, that we have an, you know, a standing offer to go nearly anywhere we're asked to go. It could be someone's backyard barbecue. If they really want to talk monk seals, we will make sure that we can get there. And, you know, the talks, sometimes we go to provide information. And one of the things that I think has been the most valuable is actually going and listening first, because a lot of times we go and we always have information that we would like to get out to people. But oftentimes people have information they want us to hear. And so if we start off giving a presentation, if it is a somewhat, you know, controversial group where you know that there's going to be a lot of emotion and people are pretty angry or frustrated, having them sit through a presentation of mine and listening to all the things I want to say tends to just make people a little more upset. And then you end up with meetings that sort of blow up. So one of the things that we've been trying to do is go and say, how's it going? What is going on? What do you want to tell me? And I'll answer any questions. I'll, you know, if you want to tell me ahead of time or just here, I will talk about whatever you want me to talk about, and whatever's important to you, because that's ultimately what'll help us build relationships and help us, you know, even that's where you end up with even the folks who say, I don't really like monk seals, but killing a monk seal is not the way to fix the problem. To me, that has been an extremely encouraging thing to hear, and makes you sort of feel like all of the effort you're putting in is actually starting to sink in.
Well, listening to the community first seems like a very simple thing to do, but that's actually quite progressive, and that's great to hear that that is part of the community plan, that it's a two-way conversation. And in the time that you've been doing this and working with monk seals, have you seen changes in the community attitudes or in people's way of viewing the issues regarding monk seals?
Yeah, I think even those really small changes in procedure, like you said, the government's really used to going and saying, here's what we're thinking, and then we'll let you have time later to tell us what you think. And I've seen meetings go really badly or very poorly with lots of yelling, because people do, they stew for the 20 minutes while they don't really listen to what you have to say. And I have seen meetings where if we let folks talk first or tell us, you know, for one of Charles's Critter Cam projects, what they're interested in finding out at the beginning before we start the project itself, we have meetings, or, you know, Charles and I will go and talk about some stuff, and then we'll say, we will stay here as long as you want and we'll answer questions. And then when it actually comes around time to the hearing, the people that were most angry at that just talk story session are like, no, I don't need to, you know, I don't feel the need to testify anymore. Or folks that were really involved in coming up with a management plan that say, no, I'm, you know, I don't really need to come to another meeting because I feel like you guys have got it covered. It does build trust, and it really does change the amount of emotion that's going on in the conversation.
Now, are you working with only communities on Oahu, or are you working statewide?
No, we are on Oahu, and so that's where it is easiest for us to get to Oahu, but we have coordinators on Kauai and Maui and partners on the other islands. And, you know, Charles is going to Kona next week, and I've given presentations on Kona. I've met with people on every single island and plan to do so again this year. And we can't get over there very frequently, but when we do go to other islands to meet, it ends up being a, you know, fly over at 6 or 7 in the morning and fly home at 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, I will either live at a coffee shop or, you know, little corner store or someone's house, and pretty much, you know, talk to people the entire day. So no, we're working statewide.
That's great. And, you know, I think you guys have done such a good job at not only talking to the community, but getting really creative in how you share your message about monk seals. Can you tell me a little bit how monk seals, chocolate, and beer come into play? Because those things typically don't go together.
Well, interestingly, these are some of those really exciting ones where they pop up and you're like, oh my God, I didn't even know about that. So those are things that were happening, you know, without the us pushing, at least from our end. And, you know, I know that when Charles said you sort of at some point feel like you're not alone in the fight anymore, that's also one of those where monk seals have shown up on endangered species chocolates. And I guess that was with our effort. There was a vote that endangered species chocolate brand was doing to determine the new covers for some of their chocolate bars. And so there was a very heavy monk seal contingent that showed out on Facebook to vote and got monk seals and I believe honeybees to be the new covers. And when you buy the endangered species chocolate, I believe it helps the Marine Mammal Center. And then Rogue Beer had a monk seal ale that they did in partnership with the Waikiki Aquarium. And that was the owner of Rogue. He recently passed away, but he lived in Hawaii, spent a lot of time here, and knew folks at the aquarium, and decided to do that just as something he wanted to do. So that's going to be launching nationally, and it is exciting to see monk seals out there.
That's fantastic. So I have to ask, what flavor of chocolate is the monk seal chocolate bar, and what type of beer is the monk seal beer?
You know, the monk seal chocolate is a dark chocolate lavender mint filled.
Oh, interesting.
I was kind of hoping for something passion fruit, sea salt, but, and I believe the beer is a, Charles, can you pipe in?
I think the beer is delicious. I think it's an ale or red ale. It's very similar to Rogue Dead Guy, for another plug for Rogue Beer. But you know you've kind of made it when somebody makes a beer for you.
Yes. So full-bodied, hoppy beer, just like the monk seal.
That's right.
Well, you know, that's really interesting when you have all these companies that want to help support, that I think, again, just goes to what you were saying and speaking to supporting the monk seal cause and monk seal species themselves.
Yeah, there's a lot of really complicated issues where the only way to fix them is going to be, you know, sitting down and talking about these really nuanced things. But on the other side of the coin, you also need to have the positive, and you need to have just monk seal. The image is out there to have people aware of them and thinking about it. And, you know, even really simple things like having monk seals and a bar of chocolate that's in stores that people see, or having beer that's sold not just in Hawaii, but on the mainland that people see, and maybe some of them go, oh, I wonder what that is. And to me, I think that can be the start of helping to raise awareness just in general and help lead to those more, you know, difficult and complicated issues later.
Well, maybe in the next controversial monk seal meeting, there should be some monk seal beer and chocolate.
That is a very good idea.
So Rachel, if people want to learn more about monk seals or more about volunteering, where can they go to get this information?
You can Google NOAA Hawaiian monk seal, and on either the Science Center or the regional offices pages, there are places where you can, they'll say, how can I volunteer or how can I help?
Well, thank you, Rachel, to you for sharing that important information. I think there'll be a lot of people that want to check out monk seals a little bit more closely, maybe drink some beer and eat some chocolate. And thank you also to Charles and Michelle. You are all very, very busy, responsible for the recovery of an entire endangered species. And your efforts are truly heroic. So thank you very much for being here. I'd also like to take a moment to thank the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology and Kosi Island Earth. I'm Carly Weiner. Now get out there and enjoy the ocean planet.